While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to all our listeners across the country and beyond our borders. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the home of informed conversation and incredible national dialogue. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Reading News Analysis, the program where these headlines are examined within their full context, whether national, social, our economic context. It is Thursday, the 12th of February, 2026. Now, as we move further into February, national attention remains focused on governance, on service delivery, on economic stability, and the pace at which key policy commitments are being implemented. The early months of the year often set the tone for the months ahead, and the decisions being made now will have lasting implications for Namibia's development trajectory. Now, right here on The Reader, we go beyond surface-level reporting. We unpack policy decisions, interrogate their broader implications, and examine how national developments translate into the everyday lived realities of Namibians, from our urban centers to the most remote rural communities. Now, in a fast-moving media environment where headlines compete for attention, On the Radar remains committed to depth, to balance, and clarity. Our focus is on context-driven analysis that connects policy, power, and the people. From 1300 hours to 1430 every weekday, we bring you expert insight, informed perspectives, and community voices. Journalism designed not only to inform, but to strengthen meaningful public dialogue. Now, you can listen live on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates. Now, whether you're listening from home, at work, on the road, stay with us as we examine the issues shaping Namibia's present and influencing its future. Let's jump straight into today's headlines. Today, the official handover ceremony of the China-aided satellite data receiving ground station took place this morning at the Telecom F station, which marks a major step forward in Namibia's technological and scientific development. The facility, constructed with support from the government of the People's Republic of China, is designed to receive and process satellite data for national use. The data will support critical sectors including weather forecasting, environmental monitoring, disaster risk management, agriculture, land use planning, and water resource management. The ground station is expected to significantly strengthen Namibia's capacity to access real-time satellite imagery, improving early warning systems and enhancing the country's ability to respond to natural disasters such as floods, droughts, and wildfires. It will also play a key role in climate monitoring and long-term development planning. Situated at the Telecom F station, the new facility integrates with existing telecommunications infrastructure and reflects ongoing bilateral cooperation between Namibia and China in the areas of technology, infrastructure development, and skills transfer. Officials describe the handover as a strategic investment in innovation and digital capacity, positioning Namibia to better harness space-based technology in support of national development priorities. Now, the Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts, and Culture, Sanit Steenkamp, was one of the speakers at the event. Let's take a listen to what the Education Minister and Innovation Minister, also comes in this particular angle to play its part, had to say.
Yes, it's quite a lovely day, and we are all here to celebrate the milestone achievement in capacity building with Namibia's national space science and technology sector. We know that globally, the space science sector is among the key drivers of modern economies, providing innovative solutions to socioeconomic challenges while creating opportunities for innovators and also entrepreneurs. This morning, as we listen to the briefing, and we also listen to the history of this very space where we are right now, it was said that this is indeed the gateway to the world and Namibia's global connectivity to the world. And I think that you are part of this today, and we are happy. The establishment of the satellite ground data receiving station comes at an opportune time and really complements Namibia's national efforts to build capacity in the space science and technology sector. The National Space Science and Technology Policy of 2021, among its key objectives, emphasizes the development of human and institutional capacity in this critical field. And here I want to really put a feather in the cap of my team. From the ED, the Deputy Executive Director, all the directors, you've done amazing. Bringing me on board, first and foremost, to understand and internalize this, but also the hard work that went into this, ladies and gentlemen, along with our partners. I remain grateful. And I reiterate the stance that was stated by our executive director. Our ministry is dedicated to full implementation of this policy of 2021 that I've just mentioned. Our executive director equally made reference to this station that will deliver and already delivers far-reaching benefits that stretch across sciences, governance, but also national security. By providing this independent, high-resolution imagery, it empowers our country to, of course, monitor borders and maritime territories in real time, and also providing us with the real-time data that has been referenced to. Our Right Honourable Prime Minister, ladies and gentlemen, I must indicate that despite our institutions of higher learning having the capacity to develop space science and technology human capital, the availability of infrastructure for space science and technology indeed still remain a major challenge. We are quite aware of that. And we are also aware of the fact that this challenge is attributed to the fact that these infrastructures, as you may imagine, it's highly costly. And the establishment required indeed advanced expertise and resources that often limited in developing countries such as Namibia. However, our heart is at the right place. And we know that there's no challenge that is insurmountable. Therefore, we already talk about phase two. It is against this backdrop that I wish to express my sincere appreciation to all our partners that our ministry have collaborated with in availing the expertise, the resources, and the time in the construction of the satellite ground data receiving station. It is worth mentioning that besides the provision of the physical infrastructure and advanced technologies, we are especially grateful for the human capital that has been built, our human resources, the 14 colleagues that have Namibians that have been trained to operate the station. Today, some of the Namibians trained through this project are operating this facility, receiving data from the CBERS-4 satellite whenever it passes over Namibia. We are truly excited about this opportunity, which represents a significant advancement for Namibia and indeed a meaningful investment in our future. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, our members of the media, the successful implementation of our new facility is an achievement true to the power of partnerships. The facility's impact will be made possible through the dedicated and ongoing collaboration of our government institutions, academia, researchers, and technical partners, as well as our external partners and those who collaborate very closely with us. And we know that as a collective, we are indeed looking forward to much more incredible technological breakthroughs that this efforts will continue to produce in the future. And this achievement reminds us that investment in science and innovation is an investment in national resilience, in knowledge and opportunity, not just for our people, but that will stretch beyond the borders of Namibia. It also reminds us that partnerships that are founded on collaboration, cooperation, and knowledge sharing remain essential in addressing national and global challenges. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm mindful of the time. I just want to state that we are indeed honored to be joined by the Right Honorable Prime Minister, Dr. Elijah Chitunga Ngurare, who represents Her Excellency, the President of the Republic of Namibia, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, and he's our guest of honor.
And with that, let's now take a listen to the Prime Minister, Leah Ngurare, as he was the keynote speaker standing in for President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, who has gone on to Ethiopia on a national visit.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Dr. Sanet Steenkamp, Minister of Education, Innovation, Daniel, Minister of Industry of MESAC, executive directors from different, also include senior officials representing various offices, ministries, agencies. This marks a major milestone in the advance of Her Excellency, therefore, as follows, and I quote, "Today we gather to celebrate a significant milestone in Namibia's journey towards national development. This marks a major milestone in the advancement of science, technology, and innovation as key enablers of national development. The official handover of the satellite ground data receiving station represents a concrete step towards realizing our national development objectives and our long-term industrialization agenda. This agenda is driven by knowledge, innovation, and modern technologies supported by state-of-the-art infrastructure. Director of Ceremony, on behalf of the government and the people of Namibia, I express our sincere gratitude to the government of the People's Republic of China for the generous support provided through the construction of this satellite ground data receiving station. This remarkable gesture solidifies the enduring friendship and strong bilateral relations between our nations and our people. We are deeply thankful for the financial resources and technical expertise that facilitated the successful construction of this advanced facility. This support enables Namibia to join a select group of African countries with modern ground stations capable of receiving real-time satellite data. This data will significantly enhance evidence-based decision-making across key economic sectors. Director of Ceremonies, our able Director of Ceremonies, Namibia recognizes its clear skies and unique geographic position as a sovereign advantage. Positioning it as a premier global hub for space observation. To match its ambitious scientific goals of transitioning from a passive consumer of space data to a strategic player in the global space science industry, the country is currently developing a legal framework. Last year, through the line minister of MESAC, the cabinet authorized the drafting of the Space Science and Technology Bill. This bill will establish a legal and institutional framework regulating space activities, ensuring compliance with international treaties, and strategically leveraging satellite technology to drive national industrialization and socio-economic development. Under our NDP-6, Namibia has strategically recognized space science as a practical engine for development. By integrating satellite data and cosmic research into our national strategy, we secure the tools necessary for environmental sustainability, resource management, and socio-economic transformation. This facility directly supports the Human, Institutional, and Infrastructure Development Program outlined in our National Development Plan 6. Its very existence signifies Namibia's decisive move to strengthen and bolster our national research, science, technology, and innovation infrastructure. Of course, here I think represented by NCRST, whence from the able director of ceremonies is coming from. So NCRST, let's give them a round of applause. The station modernizes our national research, science, technology, and innovation data management, and most importantly, serves as a training ground for building our human capital. Through this station, we ensure the next generation of Namibian space science technology experts possess the technical skills and scientific expertise needed to lead our nation into high-tech, industrialized nation. Madam Director of Ceremony, Honorable Ministers, esteemed Your Excellency, Ambassador and friends that are here, and those watching online. Space science and technology plays a crucial role in tackling our country's pressing socioeconomic challenges. This facility will enhance Namibia's capacity to effectively respond to climate change impacts like droughts, water scarcity, flood management, and sustainable water resources utilization. It will also improve land use monitoring, prevent overgrazing, strengthen disaster risk management strategies, combat poaching, illegal fishing, and overall manage our natural resources. Considering, for example, if we recall the devastating wildfire in Etosha National Park last year, which caused wildlife and grazing area loss, beyond ecological damage, it negatively impacted tourism, halting park visits during emergency responses. Advanced disaster risk management and monitoring solutions powered by satellite data could significantly speed up, improve efficiency, and reduce the overall impact of such events. Director of Ceremonies, Comrade Ministers, my humble request is to all sector ministries, offices, agencies to maximize the potential benefits of this strategic infrastructure. Let's utilize satellite data to strengthen decision making, enhance service delivery, optimize natural resource management, boost agricultural productivity, and tackle food insecurity in Namibia. This facility presents a unique opportunity for the academic and research community to advance high-impact research, innovation, and capacity building. Let's leverage this resource to position Namibia at the forefront of space science and technology in the sub-region. Through our strong partnership with the People's Republic of China, Namibia academics and researchers have numerous opportunities for collaboration with Chinese institutions. By transferring advanced technologies and building local capacity, we can empower young Namibians to become skilled engineers, innovators, and entrepreneurs in space science. This will drive job creation, economic growth, and the development of thriving space science ecosystem in Namibia. To the academic sector, use this data generated by this facility to produce high-impact research that benefit our country. Let's push Namibia to the frontiers of space science and technology, supported by our global friends, as demonstrated here today by the People's Republic of China. The station will provide direct access to research data, enabling scientists to receive raw data from Earth observation, climate, and astronomical satellites. This will foster cutting-edge research. Additionally, the station will become a center of excellence, training the next generation of scientists and engineers in space technology and applications. Strategically, owning the ground station completes Namibia's data sovereignty loop, ensuring uninterrupted access, free from political or commercial constraints. This positions the country as a regional partner, potentially leading to better terms of international space collaborations and data sharing agreements. However, Namibia still needs to invest significantly in expertise for the station's full operationalization to realize its long-term benefits of technological independence and strategic oversight. Director of Ceremonies, Comrade Ministers, and friends that are here, esteemed Comrade Ambassador, we express our deepest gratitude to the government and people of the People's Republic of China for their strong bilateral relations and unwavering support for Namibia's development aspirations. We value your partnership and your continued support as we pursue our long-term vision of becoming an industrialized nation as per our Vision 2030. Finally, I wish to commend the minister.
And now let's pause here and make room for a scheduled commercial break. Hearing from the Prime Minister, and we'll come to continue as he's appreciating China for their input and their collaboration alongside Namibia.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Lipuranenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni mandu tuto ingida ashike kapino nweku dite ofoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili unehola mo ihuetike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbo kukara ya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nene uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushenjife nawa nukumuna oijabwiri nawa ninge patafano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali hea di nola natu hea di bali no hea ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
welcome back. Now, in other news, the Namibian Institute of Public Administration and Management, also known as NIPAM, today launched its customer service charter this morning. Now, speaking at the launch is NIPAM Executive Director, Mr. Harold Murangi, who called for improved service delivery from staff members, reminding them of their commitments to service delivery within the public sector. Let's take a listen.
It cannot be a year of business as usual. And I want to repeat what the head of state is always saying. He said it should be a year where we do things differently for us to get different results and for us to get better results. That's what I want to see from all of us. We need to get better results. When I was looking at this particular paper, we are saying NIPAM is a center of excellence. We cannot be a center of excellence. And you can read it there yourself. If we are lacking doing the basics, and I'm referring to the basics, basic stuff that we are failing in. And the first basic thing that we are failing in is NIPAM staff. We have invited external people that are here, the colleagues in the meeting, but we are there. With the exception of the three directors who just at a meeting and we informed Mr. Abdullah that we are training. So how do you expect to be a center of excellence contributing to an effective and efficient and responsive public sector if Lydia is entering the wrong number and Emma is entering the wrong number? So these are the basics that I'm referring to. But it's the one thing I believe in. I don't want to do things for the sake of doing it because others are doing it. I don't want to launch NIPAM customer service charter because we are compelled to do it or because we want to tick the boxes. Or because it's part of someone's performance agreement and that person needs to be scored a higher rate for that particular thing. We need to do things because we believe in what we are doing. And that's why I'm saying all this. And when I was in my previous life at NAMCOR, people have been asking me, you have been here for too long. Why are you not moving and look for another job? I said that is my passion. This is what I believe in. And this is what I want to continue to work on retirement. And when I joined Nippon last year, that relationship and the love I have developed for the institution, that is what I want to see the next remaining period of my years here. 1 year exactly and how many months? 10 months and how many days? I want us to make Nippon the best. We have crafted for ourselves nice, very nice, and that's why Namibians are very good at putting things on paper. Our institutional values, service orientation, and we are saying we are committed to serving our stakeholders with professionalism, respect, and dedication. That's what we are saying. If you read any Nippon document, annual report, whatever document, this is what we are saying. All our stakeholders with professionalism, respect, and dedication. If I ask you a question, is it true? And I'm asking Julia, is it true? If we say we treat them with respect, where is Zakaria? And we have provided training to a stakeholder, and it takes us 3 years to issue a certificate to a stakeholder. Are we living up to our institutional values? That's number one. Number two, we are saying we value collaboration, inclusiveness, and mutual respect to achieve our shared goals. That's what we are saying. Now I'm asking, and mutual respect. How do you respect people out there? You don't even respect your fellow colleagues. How do you want to value and respect the ED in the office of the Prime Minister if you cannot even value and respect the people that you are working with on a daily basis? These are basic stuff. It should start with ourselves. And I'm saying that because I'm observing some elements of people not respecting. And when I'm saying we don't respect each other, because we don't do what is expected from us. If you have a person you are working with and you are not even greeting that person, you cannot talk to that person, what difference would we expect you to make in the lives of all the other Namibians? Change orientation, that's what we are saying. We embrace transformation and remain open to evolving demands and clients' needs. The question that I'm asking you, is it what we are saying here true? Or it was put by someone there? If it is not true, let's put the truth on paper. That we are committed to remain an institution of failures, failing to transform the Namibian public sector.
Further speaking at the launch, Dr. Harold V. Morangi, as he was addressing his staff, addressed them to say they should be committed with their work. They should be committed and make it, they should be committed to what is implemented in the Customs Service Charter. That which they said they will deliver, they should deliver on. Now, he further said, he called on the staff to improve on their service delivery for public sector, calling on them to be effective in their work and execute their commitment to their work. He reminded his colleagues of their service commitments that they have signed, that they will provide excellent service.
Response to general queries. We are saying within 2 working days. Is this true? General queries within 2 days. How many of you have received emails from fellow colleagues and did not even acknowledge? This is not only applicable to people from outside. Within 2 working days, there are many of you here at this institution, and I have addressed the issue of non-responsiveness to issues, and that is the biggest frustration. When the ED is calling a meeting, everybody is flocking to the venue. When Adutale said, there is a meeting and I will provide you with refreshments, everybody is flocking to the venue. But when Revival is calling a meeting about training so that we do things better and serve the Namibian public sector better, we are dragging our feet. We need to be reminded on certain things. But you put on paper, and you went to council, and you let the chairperson, the secretary to cabinet, who is the chairperson of the NIPAM governing council, to sign the instrument. And we know that we will not be able to commit ourselves to these commitments that we have made. So I'm leaving this with you. And when I talk, sometimes we think I'm talking to the three directors. That's why I wanted the cafeteria people to be here. Because if people are not here because they are cooking, they will continue doing the same way, year in, year out. And the one thing I'm good at, I know exactly what each and every person is doing. When we had the award at the UN function, and that you nominated, was it Kalungu, as the guy who is on time here on campus, I have been deliberately at the beginning of this year monitoring his movement, seeing whether he's really here on time. And I can testify that staff members were indeed right. Those are small things, small things. You go to the cafeteria, people are there. People are at the back. Whether they are tasting the food themselves many times, while people are queuing here and getting frustrated and they should be ready for 2 o'clock for another session, these are small little different things that will make difference.
Meanwhile, the Namibia Institute of Public Administration and Management Manager of Strategy and Organizational Performance, that is Sankwasa Mobita, stated that NIPAM holds the responsibility of transforming service delivery in the public sector. Mobita made these remarks during the launch of the NIPAM's customer service charter earlier today, and he noted that the institute ought to do things that add value to our society, and I quote, further stressing for staff members to uphold the Institute's values and use the commitments laid out in the charter as a guideline for improved service. And I quote, let us read this document, let it be part of our DNA as we operate NIPAM moving forward, Mobita said.
Very important day is when you are baptized into an organization. When you are expected to live the values that you came up with or come with into the organization and embrace the values of the organization to which you have committed to serve. When we launch a customer service charter, is to say we are now no longer us as we came, but we are NIPAM. we take the banner of NIPAM or the mantle of NIPAM onto our shoulders and we say we will make this work. We will succeed with this. By so doing, we make certain commitments. And those commitments will not happen unless ourselves do something about it. So it is a moment of transformation. It's a very simple exercise that we have or event, but it's an important one in transformation. For us to believe we can do it, we cannot continue to aspire what others have achieved and leave it there. Rather, we can change what we have to be an inspiration to others. And therefore, this launch of this day is a very significant and a very important day to NIPAM, where we commit to what we ought to do or what we ought to have done. Interestingly, we begin with arrears already. We begin at a point where we are in arrears of meeting what because we have not been doing it. For example, if we have not done, if we have a certificate that we have not issued, and we are committing today that we will issue certificate in 10 days, what it means is already we are in violation of the commitment we are making. So for us to be able to move forward, we need to address the smaller things that we have in our backyard. We need to commit. We need to change something. Colleagues, you don't win if there is nothing you lose. You need to give up something for you to achieve something. And continuing as normal will never transform NIPAM. If things have not happened before for NIPAM, it means that we have not, or we need to be able to sacrifice something to be able to achieve something. If we can, maybe we may need to sacrifice part of our time if our time as we have it did not produce results. Then we need to sacrifice part of our time for us to achieve results. Because it says Namibia, the Namibia Institute of Public Administration and Management.
And with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. See you right after that.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipurane ngelo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijabwiri nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa mbara hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be. Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now it's time for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, then moving over to continental news. Thereafter, some international news will be coming your way. Let's start off in South Africa, where President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa is set to deliver the State of the Nation address.
If I can invite her on. I spotted the basic education minister. Okay, there she is. I'm going to try and see if I can invite her on while we continue live on the SABC. Minister Gwahube, great to see you. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. My goodness, I wish we had 50 minutes and not five, but let's see how much we can get through. And I wonder if we can just start by getting your sense of how impactful the water shortages we're seeing in Johannesburg have been on schooling in that region.
It's been absolutely devastating. Remember, our schools can't actually function without water. And so a lot of schools have had to let some of the children go home. However, I've been in contact with the province, with the MEC, and that contingency plans are being made. But the water crisis in Johannesburg is impacting on education, essentially. But we are trying to make contingency plans, getting water tankers in so that schooling and learning and teaching won't be interrupted. But I'm really, really hoping that the city and the province in general can really get this matter solved and solved very quickly.
Are you happy with the updates you're getting about what that will take?
Look, I mean, I'm not entirely sure what the short-term plan is. I saw a press conference by the Minister of Water Affairs and the Premier yesterday, but I'm not entirely sure what the immediate relief is for the residents of Johannesburg, but more importantly for my schools, because remember, we only have just over 200 days of learning and teaching in a school year, and every single day that is lost is a day lost in terms of getting through the curriculum. So the province, from the education perspective, they are making means to try and keep schools open, but ultimately, if it continues in at the rate it's going, it's going to impact schools to the point where they can't open.
Yeah. Do you have a consolidated kind of report on how many schools in particular have been affected to a point where teaching and learning has been impacted?
No, we don't have a consolidated report. We obviously know it's pockets of Johannesburg. And most schools try and open as water tankers are delivered and in some instances, just so that you can keep ablution facilities going. But obviously, it's a risky situation because ultimately what you have is that you are likely going to have illnesses that are breaking out. You're likely going to have that bathrooms that don't work. And so it's really like teachers are more reluctant to keep learners at school. And so that's why I'm saying that we need an urgent solution to it so that we don't have this kind of a long-term impact. Remember, these are learners that would have been impacted by COVID-19 learning losses still. We're going to be talking about COVID-19 learning losses for a very long time. And so really my obsession about first day, first lesson, first teaching on the opening of school is not just a slogan. It's about saying that we've got to make the most out of our 200 days of learning and teaching.
Fair enough. Let's speak about the State of the Nation address, your wish list, I suppose, as a minister who I imagine if you were given the latitude would go for it. Perhaps you can speak to us about what the low hanging fruits are. I mean, I can remember for years people speaking about us not having enough teachers, for example, in the classroom. But there's also been real concerns about whether or not South Africa's getting the bang for its buck, given how much we invest and what the outcomes of education are in our country.
Look, I think I want to first maybe perhaps get onto that. The reality is that obviously a lot of people say 333 billion rand is a lot of money, but understanding that 80% of that goes to provinces for provincial actual implementation of education, and so it's not money that sits with DBE in a pot somehow and we distribute it. So that's the first thing. And ultimately, yes, while provinces are investing heavily in education, there has been over the last 10 years a gradual but rapid underinvestment in basic education. And there has been policy choices that have been made to shift monies around that have now impacted the state of our education system. The president is very much aware of our spending pressures, our fiscal challenges. I'm also aware that we're not going to necessarily, there isn't going to be magic money that's going to come out of a magic pot. But what I would really like him to focus on is seeing how we tackle the issue around infrastructure backlogs. Also really a massive endorsement on our focus on foundation phase. As I've briefed him many times, matric results are not made in matric. They're made in grade R. And we've got to make sure that we invest in the lower phases as much as possible. Our bid to make sure that grade R practitioners are qualified teachers. Remember, now that Bella is legislation, it requires that grade R is a compulsory school going age, that the practitioners become upgraded. And so also our endorsement around mother tongue-based bilingual education. That all is taking place. But, of course, a little bit of extra money from Minister Enoch Godongwana wouldn't hurt.
Absolutely. I must be honest. I never imagined a scenario where you'd be reminding us about Bella. It just shows you, it just shows you how much has happened over the past 12 months.
You know, our ACDP in South Africa has called for the amendment of the South African Constitution.
Let's get the thoughts on what you can anticipate for the State of the Nation address. The ACDP's Reverend Kenneth Mishwe joins us in the studio to get his sense of where to from here and what we can expect and what he'd like to hear from the President later. Reverend, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
What do you want to hear from the President? Could he actually give us anything different, do you think, from the last 9 addresses? Because some, and the people that my colleague Iman Repeti has been speaking to, have just said it's always the same thing.
Well, I agree with them. But I'm hoping that today his conscience will remind him of all the men and the women who are sitting on the pavement, sleeping on the pavement. And when you ask many of them, what are you doing here on the pavement this time of the day or night? They will tell you, we are looking for jobs. So high unemployment in this country is the issue that the president must focus on. Mm. The most painful thing for me is to see graduates, to see professionals, to see medical doctors toying and also protesting, saying we want to offer good delivery of healthcare to our people in the clinics and in the hospitals. But we are told that government cannot pay us. So we have people who are saying our hearts are yearning to assist the patients who need quality healthcare, but they cannot give it because government says they can't pay the doctors.
These are the same people we said should be going out. Go and get an education. Go and do this so that you can have a brighter future. And yet it doesn't seem to be that bright. What went wrong, do you think, in us getting ourselves to the right place in terms of service delivery as a country?
I feel like all of that is going to Oma wa o tomono okuchako NHP. Genge wa longi fa longi foli lipedu lo wa wo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku ne fiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oye. O wa washi mali wa o shosha kupako. Washika we delwa komto alando mako. Kashi, koma punglo e na shanu unjola welewe. Oto dulu okulongi fa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko, opo una miti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti la po oi mali wa ishona. Oyo hodulu okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, mayakulo olu hapu, haka laina kwa telwa, mowa we kwa folo elu unamiti. Ile, oto julu no kuli, okupitifapo e mwedi donumba, toka laino futa ea kulolo elu unamiti. Kouya lele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fano ododi na okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
The things that I think went wrong was to try and offer something that no country in the world that I know of is offering, free health care. Okay? You have foreign nationals, and many of them illegal foreign nationals, competing and sometimes even threatening to fight the locals, who are saying, we go into hospitals, we are told that there is no medication because these guys that are illegal in the country are taking all the medication. Now, what of the problems that has led to that is the constitution, the current constitution that has promised everyone has the right to access to health care. Okay? When other countries are saying every citizen, so the ACDP is going to fight to amend the constitution so that we do not give free services that no other country in the world is giving to illegal immigrants in the country, but we focus mainly on the citizens. The citizens of South Africa must benefit from the democratic dispensation and the democratic constitution that we have, and that is not the case today.
So the issue is not necessarily that we're giving out free education, it's who we're giving it to. You think that that is a pain on the fiscus, that is hurting us financially?
Definitely. Where in the world? You know, America has money, they don't do that. UK, you can talk about all the European countries, you can talk about Canada. They will not give all illegal immigrants what South Africa, with limited resources, is trying to do. So government must correct their strategy, and they also must amend the constitution, because those guys who are fighting for these free resources have a constitutional right. And until we address this constitutional, I believe, blunder, then we are going to continue having less resources to assist South Africans who are the majority of taxpayers in this country.
Let's talk about jobs. We haven't given people enough jobs, have we? I mean, you're just talking about the healthcare professionals who themselves are struggling to find any kind of work, any kind of jobs. And then if you go to lower skills, it gets even worse. Where are we getting that wrong? Is it the kind of education we're offering, where we're offering that? Are we forcing people maybe to, or enticing people to go to university far too much? Maybe we should be looking at TVET colleges and the like, etc. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the TVET colleges have to be promoted much more now, so that at least people will have skills. This government has made a lot of blunders. One of the things that have surprised me was to see children in Japan, primary school children, who are masters in economics, who are masters, who are growing with knowledge, with mathematics, for example, cleaning their rooms, cleaning the school classrooms, okay? They clean, something that we were doing when we were their age, all right? But our children are not given any responsibility. If you did not know, Arabile, ACDP is the only political party that voted against the Constitution of South Africa. And one of the reasons we did that was that we saw rights but no responsibilities. Yeah. Rights must be balanced with responsibilities, and this is one of the things that we want government to address, because when you have children who at home cannot help, because government said when they lied to people, we want the children to focus on studies. You see our children, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, in the streets. So they don't study. They are not producing better marks than those children who are working and doing manual jobs in school. Because
one thing I do pick up from South Africans, especially leaders, when they speak about foreigners in their country, and I would say it like this, so to say that they say it so shamelessly that foreigners are even getting free treatment in our government hospitals. Whatever happened to Ubuntu? In that word or that phrase comes from South Africa. South Africans, I tend to really think that this thing of discriminating other races, other tribes, is really embedded in them. And I don't know what needs to be done for them to really change. Because at the end of the day, why can't we all just coexist in a country, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of country of origin, where we are coming from? And I think I really take off my hat off for Namibia, because we can be very accommodative, and it would be wonderful if we continue it that way. Nonetheless, let's move over to Botswana, where Botswana's mining industry is now open for business, according to the Minister of Energy, Bongolo Joy Kene-Mwendo.
Botswana is celebrating 60 years of independence this year, and it's, 1966 to 2026, and we're really excited about the heritage that we have of excellence in mining for over 50 years, and we want to really nurture those experiences and use them to leverage into the next 60 years. And right now, we are re-evaluating, reassessing all the information that has gone into exploration, and we are building on that information in order to unlock the rest of the 70% of Botswana that hasn't been explored. And we just started a national exploration company that we hope will partner with the private sector in order to explore a lot more. So we're looking for partners in that space. And we just came through with an MOU with all the mining companies in Botswana to leverage all of their supply chain and their budgets to really encourage companies to move to Botswana or to do value addition in Botswana in order to target not only Botswana mining companies, but the region to make supplies of the critical consumables, flocculants, meshes, mesh wires, explosives, to mention a few. So all are welcome to Botswana, and we're working through really good special economic zone incentives that will ensure that this move is viable. The mining industry in Botswana is open for business. We are a topmost mining jurisdiction in the world, and now we want to really leverage on that and to harness all the opportunities through partnership. I think Botswana is a topmost showcase for what collaboration can do, given our longest running Triple P with De Beers that we last year announced here at the mining in Durban, and now we're 1 year into that partnership. But this partnership has been running for 50 years. It's the oldest Triple P in the world, so they say. I stand corrected, but it's also the most sustained partnership between the government and the private sector. And so we want to use that as a case study, and we want to build more partnerships like that with the private sector. But we also encourage B2B partnerships in Botswana and looking more broadly into the region, because after all, we believe that success, our true success, will be defined by a united vision and intentional action across the region. We are working together as part of our agreement with De Beers. We're working on a Diamond for Development Fund that will ensure that we support entrepreneurship to work towards diversification outside of the diamond industry. Of course, we still want to support the diamond industry, but we believe that there's a lot more wealth and value as well outside the diamond industry. So this fund will help to do that. And we are working with a few countries towards a center of excellence for laboratory testing with our Geoscience Institute, because we really want to make sure that we know exactly what we are producing, what we have under earth, and we run the sample testing ourselves amongst others. So that's really exciting collaboration that's coming in from Saudi, from Oman, and a few other countries. Botswana is open for business. We are excited about the future of mining.
Inua, FNB Zambia at the mining in Durban.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our day one coverage right here in Cape Town, South Africa, where I'm about to have a conversation with the chief executive at FNB Zambia. Recently, we interviewed a head of mining in Durban, and guess what? We get a chance now to get her reactions from President Hakainde Hichilema's keynote speech on day one. Madam Chola, how are you?
I'm very well, Willow. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. So, it's wonderful that we now get a chance now to engage in Cape Town. But more importantly, the monumental speech that our president actually gave, to the delegates and audience on day one of Mining Dub. From the onset, from his speech, what are your immediate reactions in terms of his key messaging around mining? We've also noted that there's been consistency in signaling to the mining industry. What does that mean for banks such as yours?
Okay. No, thank you very much, Mwalua. So I think the president's speech was really on point, as usual. The president spoke to a few components, and some of the key takeaways that I would like to sort of just highlight was the discussion around the consistency in policy in mining, as in any other industry, for there to be true economic development. So spoke to that. But the key messages that are reverberating at the Silk in Daba is around partnerships.
Okay.
The importance of partnerships in mining development, in mining growth. He also spoke to value addition in mining being a key component. But I think what's important and underpinning all of this was the message that he delivered on Africa being masters of their own destiny. The president, when he spoke about Zambia and its journey with the IMF, he said, we designed our program in Zambia. But that is how we must design and define mining investment across Africa. He spoke about, we know what we want. We want value addition. We do not want to be an exporter of raw commodity. So those messages then start to talk about how Africa wants to do mining for the future. And for me, that underpins a lot of what we believe in as FNB, as the First Rand Group, which is around shared prosperity. Because these countries that have this resource base, which is most of the countries across Africa, must start to grow from the resources that they have. It's not about just exporting the raw materials. And I think one of the speakers spoke about exporting jobs, exporting raw materials, and importing inflation. Something that the president also leveraged. So when we talk about mining, we talk about the growth of the country, we talk about value addition, we talk about creating jobs, we talk about stemming migration from Africa, from skilled young Africans, because we're creating an environment in these countries where they can thrive, where they can find jobs. We're creating employment. We're creating base for entrepreneurship by Africans. And this is the place where a bank, a financing institution like FNB will thrive, because now we are there as a partner in this economic journey. So as FNB Zambia, we're very excited about what's happening in the Zambian economy. We're excited about the targets in mining that the country has set up, because all of that will need financing. Financing is the foundation for any economic growth. So that's a key part that FNB Zambia plays in the Zambian economy. It's a key part that financing will play in the Zambian economy. It's a key part that we play in supporting mining and the mining ecosystem. So we're very excited about what's happening at the Indaba. We're excited about the messages reverberating out of the Indaba. We're excited about Africa becoming masters of their own destiny, defining and creating employment in Africa. We're a mineral resource hub. Therefore, we must also then add value so that the technology that is, you know, fueling this excitement around minerals starts to happen in our economies.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, Sudan Central Bank warns against unlicensed financial services.
In Darfur, where commercial banks have been closed since April 2023, the war has left a financial vacuum that unofficial systems are beginning to fill. A bank announced by the RSF-aligned Battle Administration, called Mustaqbal or Future Bank, says it provides electronic transfers to help ease a severe liquidity crisis. Sudan Central Bank, however, says the institution is unlicensed and warns that any deposits or transactions...
Let's make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back to continue. Stay tuned.
Short on cash? Get to USAFE for these super savings. 1 liter long life Nam Milk full cream milk, just $19.99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram U brand cornflakes, just $39.99 Namibian dollars. 100 milliliter Aquafresh toothpaste, just $19.99 Namibian dollars. 2 kilograms of Rice King parboiled rice, also $39.99 Namibian dollars. And pay only $109.99 Namibian dollars for a 10 kilogram bag of Top Score Super Maize Meal. Hurry to your favorite You Save and save now.
Made through it are not legally protected.
We heard about the application, but we never saw it online, and we won't use informal digital transfers to keep business running. It's not only about being prohibited, it's about the possibility of fraud, as it's unlicensed.
For traders and families, access to cash has become a daily struggle, with formal banking networks collapsed across much of Darfur. Many say they have little choice but to rely on whatever services remain available. Residents describe a system driven more by necessity than trust.
When there's a cash crisis or the application faces technical issues, the whole market paralyzes, so people may look for alternatives. So I can relate why people in Darfur can use it, but I personally don't trust unlicensed applications to protect my money and myself.
Economists warn that volatile financial structures could deepen Sudan's institutional fragmentation, creating competing systems of authority in an already divided territory. They are also skeptical about its credibility.
There are international standards, and the Financial Action Task Force, which oversees the global banking sector and issues regulations and laws to combat terrorist financing. Sudan is committed to these requirements. However, any application issued outside the Central Bank of Sudan would have no official standing or effectiveness. Such applications cannot be considered secure, as they're not backed by any guaranteeing authority and does not offer the same level of trust or assurance.
Government officials say they are looking into ways to protect civilian savings, but access is still restricted in conflict areas where formal institutions have not resumed operations. For many in Darfur, the lack of reliable banking system highlights how the war has disrupted not only security, but the basic structures of daily economic life.
From Port Sudan, the dispute over banking control reflects a wider battle over authority in a country fractured by war. With formal institutions still absent in parts of Darfur, civilians are left relying on risky alternatives to manage their money. Nabah Muhyiddin, CGTN, Port Sudan.
Libya grants a foreign oil companies exploration licenses.
Libya approved exploration and production licenses Wednesday to several foreign energy companies, including giants Chevron and BP, for the first time since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi. In addition to Chevron, Wednesday's winners of the latest bidding round included Africa's largest privately owned energy company, Nigeria's Itel.
Thirty-seven
companies competed in this tender. Five companies won and joined the Libyan oil sector and to begin exploring for oil and gas in the blocks announced on land or in submerged waters. Last month, Libya signed agreements worth more than $20 billion of investments by Total Energies and ConocoPhillips to increase oil production over 25 years. The immediate target will be 1.6 million barrels, but the medium-term target will be 2 million barrels and potentially more depending on the results of these explorations.
بناء على ما ستسفر عنه هذه الاكتشافات من نتائج.
Analysts say interest in Libyan oil remains subdued, as only five blocks drew bids out of a total of 20 offered for exploration and extraction. Libya currently produces around 1.5 million barrels a day, sitting on Africa's largest reserves at an estimated 48.4 billion barrels.
U.S. job growth surges in January. Unemployment rate drops to 4.3%.
U.S. job growth accelerated in January and the unemployment rate fell. The non-farm payrolls report from the Labor Department showed signs of stability that could give the Federal Reserve room to keep interest rates steady while policymakers monitor inflation. The release of the report was delayed a few days by the recent partial government shutdown. Employers added 130,000 jobs last month, nearly twice the estimate of economists polled by Reuters. The report also showed the unemployment rate fell to 4.3% from 4.4%. But revisions showed the economy added only 181,000 jobs in 2025, instead of the previously estimated 584,000. Economists say President Donald Trump's aggressive trade and immigration policies continue to cast a shadow on the labor market, cautioning against viewing the surge in payrolls in January as marking a material shift in conditions. Kayla Brune, head of economic analysis at Morning Consult, says custom indicators her organization tracks on unemployment and income show worrying signs.
Both of those metrics showed a spike in the second half of January. For the lost pay and income one, we'd actually seen this upward trend begin in late 2025. But what changed in 2026 is that it spread from more just the lower income group who were more isolated and kind of experiencing tougher economic conditions. It spread to hit the high income group. And that's kind of ringing alarm bells for me because of what we've seen with the K-shaped economy and because of how important that group has been for driving overall economic growth.
Healthcare employment increased by 82,000 jobs in January, more than double their monthly average in 2025, leading some economists to conclude that January's increase was a fluke. The construction industry added 33,000 jobs, driven by hiring of non-residential specialty trade contractors, attributed by some economists to data centers needed to power artificial intelligence. Construction employment was virtually flat in 2025.
President Donald Trump and Netanyahu meet as Iran nuclear talks reach a critical stage.
But let's look now at the Middle East with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, due to meet President Trump at the White House later today. The talks they're holding are widely expected to focus on Iran. Mr. Netanyahu wants the U.S. to push Tehran to cut its ballistic missile program and support for armed groups across the Middle East. Iran repeatedly saying it will only discuss its nuclear program and suggested it might be ready to limit its ambitions in return for sanctions relief. Negotiations restarted last week against the backdrop of a large American military buildup in the region. Let's take you to our Middle East correspondent, Ilan Nell, who joins us from Jerusalem. Ilan, Benjamin Netanyahu, very experienced with American presidents, very experienced when it comes to these kind of meetings, and he knows President Trump well. What is it, though, that he is going to be after from the U.S. president?
What Israel really wants to see is the U.S. widening the scope of its talks with Iran so that they embrace more than just its nuclear program. It wants to look at this issue of ballistic missiles, the arsenal that Iran has been building up. It wants to look at Iran's support for proxies around this region, whether it's Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen. But Iran has been insisting that this should be first and foremost about its nuclear program. We've had some new comments in the course of the day from the Iranian president saying that they won't yield to excessive demands. And you've also got an advisor to the supreme leader in Iran being quoted on Noor News, Iranian media, saying as well that Iran's missile capabilities are its red line. They are not subject to negotiation. And this all appears to be happening at a key moment because we've had that first round of talks between the US and Iran in Oman at the end of last week. And, you know, the American negotiators are expected to go ahead with another round of talks soon.
Yolande, do you think that they will get on to Gaza, or is President Trump just leaving that until the Board of Peace meets next week?
So this is primarily about Iran, according to the Israeli Prime Minister. That's what he told journalists before he left. And indeed, he was supposed to be going to the U.S. for that Board of Peace meeting next week. But he brought his visit forward because of the advances in talks between the U.S. and Iran. He has said that Gaza will be on the agenda. And, of course, this is happening at the time when the U.S. has said it's moving on with the second phase of President Trump's peace plan, the more complicated phase. We've had the Israeli Prime Minister reiterating in recent days that Hamas must be forced to disarm. We understand from U.S. media reports that plans are being drawn up about how to achieve that in the U.S. So the Israeli Prime Minister will want to influence those as well. And you can imagine that the U.S. will also want answers on why the Rafah crossing between the Gaza Strip and Egypt has not been opened up more fully, on why Palestinian technocrats who have been approved to go in and, you know, manage the day-to-day governance of the Gaza Strip to take over from Hamas and be overseen by the Board of Peace, why they've not yet entered into Gaza. At the same time, you know, this meeting in Washington is going to be taking place amid a lot of international condemnation about another development this week where Israel really sort of announced a series of measures that will deepen its control over the West Bank.
Yaron, thank you.
Meanwhile, Democrats are pushing for another partial government shutdown.
And breaking tonight, the House has now passed the SAVE Act that requires voter ID, proof of citizenship to vote in our elections. It's called election integrity. Anyway, we're joined by the one and only Democrat. There was only one Democrat voting for this common sense legislation to bring integrity and confidence to our elections. Here with reaction, the House Speaker, Mike Johnson. Well, let me see. You're going to go to hell for putting your life on the line to arrest the worst of the worst? Okay, maybe I'm not reading the same Bible.
Obviously, Pam Bondi said it well. They turned it into a circus. These are unserious people, and they demonstrate that with their antics in the committee hearings now, which have really turned into theatrics, as she said, and with their votes. And that's what we got tonight, John. House Republicans have been working so hard to ensure the integrity of American elections. We had a big win tonight because we passed the Save America Act, and only one Democrat out of all of them joined us in that very common sense piece of legislation. John, all it does is it ensures that if you're going to register to vote, you have to have proof of citizenship, and when you show up to vote, you have to show a photo ID. These are 90% issues in public polling, and 70% of Democrats agree that it should be the law. Only one House Democrat voted for it tonight.
I'd like to see a series of votes, and I'm glad that passed. I'm glad the Republicans did the right thing. I'd like to see Democrats on the record voting in favor of sanctuary cities and states. They're already on the record voting for the largest tax increase in history. When Republicans voted for the largest tax decrease in history, cut in history, if they want to vote to defund ICE, I'm okay with that, too. If they want to vote to defund, dismantle and have no bail laws, I'm okay with putting them on the record for that. I'm okay with putting them on the record for all these radical positions. This way, the American people have a real choice election.
They really do. And that's one of the reasons we're so confident about this midterm election coming up. We are going to make history. We're going to grow the majority for the Republican Party because we have an extraordinary record to run on. And they have an outrageous record that they have produced with their votes. And we're going to continue to put them on record, Sean, and make sure the people know exactly what they stand for. This is an insurgent left party. This is not your father's Democrat Party anymore. They're not serious people. They have an absolute Marxist, far left socialist ideology, and that is what you will get if you elect Democrats to Congress. You've just seen it on display tonight. So this is an important election for all the reasons we know, all the marbles. And I believe Republicans are going to overperform in this election, and we're going to keep the majority and keep the Trump agenda, the America First agenda, going for 4 full years.
So they're on record wanting to defund the police, then defund, dismantle, no bail laws. Are they going to now try to defund ICE and all the related agencies that will be impacted?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I mean, you know, we got 11 of the 12 appropriations bills done and through the process signed into law. We're spending less money. We're acting as better stewards of taxpayer dollars. We're making the federal government work more efficiently and effectively for the people. And the one bill that was left on the table is Department of Homeland Security. That funding measure, which, by the way, covers all the agencies that keep the American people safe, FEMA, TSA, the Coast Guard, the Secret Service, and ICE, of course, and the Customs and Border Patrol. And the Democrats don't want to fund it because it's political for them. And it looks like they're pushing us into another partial government shutdown for no reason whatsoever. And they're going to make the American people less safe because they're trying to score political points and make a point. And I think it's going to backfire.
They're going to shut down the country. So we won't be funding TSA agents. How is any American going to get on an airplane? It's not going to happen. That means they'll shut down the airlines? They'll shut down FEMA? God forbid we have an emergency?
Yeah, at the worst possible time. And they're willing to use the American people as pawns. They said it.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonanda Dengue program brought to you by Lois Ashimi. Goodbye.